the equivalent of dragging out a bar brawler by the back of his collar. For families whose lives and interrelationships were permanently wrapped in pride and appearance, that would be a terrible and humiliating insult. The Ascendancy military was theoretically above such political issues, but Arlani had always tried to be sensitive to them anyway, if only to avoid unnecessary friction with people she had to deal with every day. But for once, she didn't especially care.
"I know," she told Wutro, "but they created a war zone in the middle of a public traffic area, and they need to be sent a clear message that that's unacceptable. And if they insist on having that message beaten into their thick skulls, the expansionary defense fleet is willing and able to do so."
"Understood, Admiral,"
Wutro said. She still sounded dubious, but she recognized that her commander had made up her mind.
"In that case, may I suggest we also move them into different orbital shells? That way they'll at least have to work at it if they insist on restarting their fight."
"Good idea," Arlani said. "Oskim, Octrimo, get to it."
She pointed at the patrol cruiser.
"And again, we'll start with that one."
"I'm not sure what your goal here was, Admiral Arlani,"
Supreme Admiral Jafosk ground out.
"But if it was to infuriate the entire Sindicure, you've succeeded beautifully."
"I'm sorry the Sindicure sees things that way, sir,"
Arlani said, glowering at her cabin speaker. She'd just turned over the watch to Senior Commander Bicleon and was looking forward to a shower and a good meal when Jafosk's call came through, which, all by itself, marked the occasion as unusual. Supreme General Bakhief was the one who normally supervised expansionary defense fleet forces and acted as liaison between them and the Council and Sindicure. The fact that Jafosk had felt the need to intervene directly, or, more likely, that someone in one of those bodies had ordered him to do so, shaded this conversation toward the ominous.
"Did any of these irate speakers and syndics happen to notice that some of their own ships were in the vicinity when the Tamai and Droke started shooting at each other?"
she continued.
"And that stopping the fight when I did may have saved those lives and those cargoes?"
"They did,"
Jafosk said, his tone marginally less hostile. Having delivered the obligatory rebuke, he perhaps felt he could now tone down the rhetoric a bit.
"A couple of them mentioned that and expressed some appreciation, but even they were adamant that the expansionary defense fleet isn't even supposed to be hanging around Ascendancy worlds, let alone opening fire on anyone."
"Did they have any helpful suggestions as to what I should have done instead?"
Arlani asked.
"Or what you or Supreme General Bakhief should have done, for that matter?"
"There were plenty of suggestions,"
Jafosk said.
"But since you added the word helpful, I can spare you the list."
"Yes, sir," Arlani hesitated. "They're worried, aren't they?"
"Worried, angry, and frightened,"
Jafosk said heavily.
"That's a bad combination, Arlani. Half of them see Jixtus deliberately provoking the 9 and 40 and trying to goad them into fighting among themselves, while the other half are starting to wonder if the Kilji offer of additional warships might just be the lesser evil."
Arlani nodded. That was how she was reading the situation, too. She'd hoped she'd been overly pessimistic. Apparently not.
"And we can't just kick him out."
"Not unless and until he actually attacks someone,"
Jafosk agreed.
I'd wonder if any of the syndics were starting to regret the whole non-intervention policy. Except that I also know most of them consider those protocols to have descended from the stars on a sea of fire.
Can we at least kick him out of our systems?
Aralani pressed.
Sending a laser barrage across his bow doesn't count as attacking.
You've been spending too much time with Senior Captain Thrawn,
Jafarsk said sourly.
Just because he thinks he can get away with it, and because Bakeef lets him, doesn't mean the Syndicure will put up with it forever.
Just the same, in this case Thrawn might have a good point.
I'm not arguing, Admiral,
Jafarsk said.
I'm just stating facts. Are you ready to head back to Spossia?
Almost, Aralani said. Senior Captain Wutraor just has to finish her part of Patrol Command's data work.
Tell her to make it fast,
Jafarsk warned.
The Ventress is en route to Spossia, but it won't arrive for another few hours. Under the circumstances, I don't like leaving the UAG unguarded.
Understood, Aralani said. Though I'd rather like to see Jixtus try to break into their vault.
You would?
Jafarsk grunted.
Frankly, I wouldn't. Get back to guard duty. Let's try to avoid finding out what would happen.
Yes, sir, Aralani said. We'll be on our way soon.
Good. And Aralani?
Yes?
Try not to irritate anyone else today.
I'll do my best, sir, Aralani said. But I won't make any promises.
I didn't think you would. Safe travels, Admiral.
This is unacceptable,
Sistalmu bit out. His face on Thurfian's calm display twisted with anger and passion.
Completely unacceptable. The Tamai were merely defending their perfectly legitimate claims. And this expansionary defense fleet admiral thinks she can just move in and humiliate them in front of the entire Tamiron system? Those ships aren't even supposed to be inside the Ascendancy. Let alone involving themselves in struggles that are none of their official concern.
I understand your frustration, Syndic Prime,
Thurfian said, though he doubted Zistalmo would be nearly as outraged by the Vigilant's action if the Tamai weren't an on-again, off-again ally of the Arisi.
But with possible enemy warships moving around the Ascendancy, we need all of ours to be close at hand.
What enemy warships?
Zistalmu scoffed.
Jixtus and that pathetic little Kilji war cruiser? Really, your Venerante? The Defense Force could swat down a dozen ships like that before breakfast. And they, at least, know how to properly behave around the 9 and the 40. I think people like Aralani spend so much time outside the Ascendancy that they've lost all sense of understanding and propriety.
That's possible,
Thurfian said evasively, determined not to let himself get verbally pinned down.
I'm not clear on what you want from me.
I want the Myth family's support in getting their collective nose out of our business.
Sistalmu said.
I already have petitions from 3 of the 9 demanding the Council pull the expansionary defense fleet ships from any world where one or more of the ruling families have major interests and sending them back out into the chaos where they're supposed to be. We have our family fleets. We can protect our own worlds.
I'm not sure I agree with sending them out of the Ascendancy,
Thurfian said.
but I can join in a recommendation that they go off and park in Naparar orbit while we find some compromise to keep them from meddling in family affairs.
Not exactly what I was looking for.
I know, but it's the best I can do.
Sistalmu glared a moment, then gave a little shrug.
Very well,
he said.
As long as they're not poking their fingers everywhere, I suppose they can sit at Naparar. Easier to ignore there, anyway.
Agreed,
Thurfian said.
I'll have my petition drawn up and sent to you within the hour.
Thank you.
Sistalmu paused.
I presume you've also heard that the Springhawk has returned without Senior Captain Thrawn?
I heard, yes,
Thurfian said, a sour taste in his mouth.
Apparently he's been working with aliens again.
And fighting battles with them, and making deals with them, and taking them on as allies,
Sistalmu said.
None of which he has the slightest authorization to do.
What would you like me to do about that?
Thurfian asked with strained patience.
As long as he's out in the chaos, there's not much chance of hauling him back and sitting him down in one of your hearing rooms.
He has to come back sooner or later,
Sistalmu said.
I've already put out an order to the Defense Force to detain him if and when he shows his face.
Thurfian frowned.
You put out an order?
With the backing of our speaker, yes,
Sistalmu said.
Do you have a problem with that?
Yes, Thurfian said. Because the Sindicure doesn't have jurisdiction over the military.
Maybe it doesn't, but it should,
Sistalmu countered.
We are the Ascendancy's ultimate authority, after all. If Jafar Skambakif won't rein him in...
His eyes flashed.
And if you can't rein him in, then it's up to us.
Interesting thought,
Thurfian murmured. Except that it wasn't up to them. Not to the Sindicure as a whole, and certainly not to a single Syndic Prime or even a Speaker. The Aristocra of long ago had had solid reasons for insulating the Chiss military from ruling family politics, and those reasons hadn't changed.
As to jurisdiction, I'll point out that the order was issued several hours ago, and Supreme Admiral Jafosk still hasn't taken issue with it.
Sistalmu continued.
It would be helpful if in the future such orders could be issued jointly by the Irisi and the Myth.
I think that would be a bit awkward,
Thurfian pointed out.
The Myth Patriarch can hardly be seen asking the Defense Force to detain one of its own family members.
I wasn't talking just about Thrawn,
Sistalmu said.
I was talking about other matters that might need to be addressed.
You're welcome to bring them to my attention when they occur,
Thurfian said.
But I can't simply make a blanket offer to support you.
For a moment, Sistalmu seemed to study his face.
I remember a time when you and I were willing to ignore, circumvent, or even manipulate the political and military establishments for the good of the Ascendancy,
he said.
I warned you that becoming Patriarch would change your attitudes. I see I was right.
I have new responsibilities now,
Thurfian said.
Not to mention heightened visibility. I can't skulk around the March of Silence, having clandestine meetings with rival family syndics.
Would you, if you could?
I don't know,
Thurfian conceded.
It would depend on the topic.
And if that topic was still what we were going to do about Thrawn?
We'll have to see what he says in his defense when he returns.
And then?
Zistalmo waved a hand in dismissal.
Never mind. I think I already know the answer.
He straightened up and gave a curt nod.
Thank you for your time, your Venerante,
he said, his voice gone stiffly formal.
I'll await the delivery of your petition.
Good day, Syndic Prime,
Thurfian said, reaching for his comm control. Zistalmo got to his first, and the display blanked. Thurfian sighed. Over the past few weeks, as he settled into his new position, he'd wondered what being patriarch would do to his friendships. Most of them had thankfully survived, though in somewhat altered form. But it was looking like his relationship with Zistalmo was already dead. But then, it had probably never been a real friendship in the first place. They'd been rivals, united in a cause they believed in, trying to protect the Ascendancy from a threat they thought only they could recognize. Zistalmo still saw Thrawn as a threat. The question was, did Thurfian? He snorted under his breath. Of course he did. Thrawn was still a danger to the Ascendancy's stability, and the sudden increase in tension just underscored how fragile that stability was. But as he tried to tell Zistalmo, things weren't as simple as they'd been before. Not only did he have to consider the Myth family's best interests, but he also had to factor in the other family's perception of him and those interests. And that, he was rapidly discovering, was a difficult balance to maintain. Besides, anything he did right now was probably moot. Thrawn had abandoned his ship, and Zistalmo had forced through the detention order. And that was that. Expansionary Defense Fleet officers could talk all they wanted about camaraderie and protecting one another's backs. But when official decisions had been made and orders issued, they would be followed. And once Bakhif had him in custody, that threat, at least, would be gone. Though as a matter of interest, he would still like to hear whatever Thrawn had to say in his defense. In the meantime, there was Myth family work that needed to be done. He keyed his intercom.
Senior aide Thavik, please come in, he said. I need you to draw up a petition for me.
Chapter 20. Standing just inside Vault 4, far below the surface of Spasia, Patriarch Lamiov listened to the brief report and gave the proper acknowledgement.
Ishalo just landed,
he announced as he put away his comm.
He shall be here shortly.
Bakhif nodded. About time.
Do you want me to go back up and meet him halfway?
No, that's all right,
Lamiov said.
The guards have their orders, and there's no point in drawing more attention to this whole thing than we already have.
I suppose,
Bakhif said, wincing a little.
I hate to think how many panicked reports have already flooded Chila and Naparar about an alien warship orbiting Spasia.
Oh, probably no more than a few hundred,
Lamiov said with a wry smile.
Hopefully, all of them will be automatically attached to my assurances that everything is under control before Jafask sends half the defense force charging to the rescue.
Hopefully,
Bakhif said.
Though if he didn't react that way when Jixis and his Kilji friends showed up, I don't see why he'd do it now.
Never discount the novelty factor,
Lamiov said.
No Laspossia has ever seen a Nicardoon blockade frigate before. Certainly not one painted with a Pakian subclan symbol. No,
Lamyov agreed.
Like him or hate him, Thras always had a knack for bringing fresh problems to the table.
And the Sindicure does so enjoy fresh problems.
Indeed.
Lamyov looked over at the Vault 4 door.
Do you ever regret it, Labaki? The path we started down all those years ago?
Do I regret it?
Bakif asked, feeling a fresh sense of his own age. Once there had been 10 or 12 friends who'd persisted in calling him by his old Stibla Kor name when they were in private. Now Lamyov was the only one left.
Or do I regret him?
Not sure, that's a different question,
Lamyov said.
But without Thras...
He shook his head.
It wasn't supposed to end this way.
It hasn't exactly ended yet,
Bakif reminded him.
And to answer your question, no, I don't regret it. Though I'll admit there have been times when I was defending him in front of some group of syndics that I wished we'd chosen someone else.
Was there anyone else?
No, Bakif said. But that's the point, isn't it? There wasn't, there isn't, nor is there likely ever to be one again. Not since Thomaro the Tragic has the Ascendancy produced anyone with Thrawn's unique combination of strategic and tactical skills, plus the ability to observe, analyze, and predict.
If only he also had Patriarch Thomaro's political skills,
Lamyov said ruefully.
Which I doubt he ever will,
Bakif said. That had, after all, been the whole idea of working with Patriarch Thuraki to team him up with Thras. The two of them working together... But it's no good dwelling on what might have been.
I suppose not.
Lamyov gave a small, rather pained chuckle.
I heard once that pondering what-ifs and other missed opportunities is a sign of old age. I wonder which one of us it is.
It's you, of course,
Bakif assured him.
I gave up aging years ago.
Ah, yes, I'd forgotten.
Lamyov nodded toward the vault door.
Do you have any idea what he wants?
He didn't say,
Bakif said, a shiver running through him.
But with the turmoil in the Ascendancy, and the sudden and suspicious alien focus on Sunrise, I don't really want to guess.
Neither do I,
Lamyov said.
But that hasn't stopped me. You?
Bakif shook his head.
No.
For the next few minutes, they waited together in silence. At last, the door was opened from the outside by the guards, and Thrawn stepped into the vault. Bakif watched Thrawn's face closely as he strode up to them, wondering if his own presence here had caught the other off guard. But if Thrawn was surprised to see his superior, it didn't show in his expression.
Patriarch Lamyov,
Thrawn greeted him, giving each of them a small head bow.
Supreme General Bakif, thank you for seeing me.
Your request didn't leave much room for argument,
Lamyov said.
Yes, and I'm sorry if my communication was overly brusque,
Thrawn said.
But the timing is going to be critical, and I still don't know how much margin for error I have.
Apology accepted,
Lamyov said.
Tell us what you want from us.
I need an item from Vault 4,
Thrawn said.
I know UAG policy is to not allow alien artifacts to leave Stibla control.
Tell us what you need,
Lamyov said.
And what you need it for,
Bakif added.
I believe Jixis is part of an alien force seeking to conquer this region of the Chaos, Thrawn said. Or possibly even the entirety of it. I also believe he has a fleet nearby that he intends to bring against the Ascendancy. He seemed to draw himself up. My intent is to draw him into an ambush before he launches his attack.
Violating explicit Syndicure protocol,
Bakeef murmured.
If necessary, yes.
Lamiov twitched his fingers in invitation.
Tell us all.
They listened in silence as Thrawn described his plan. And as he spoke, Bakeef felt a coldness settle over him. It was madness, he told himself over and over. The coldness in his heart deepening with each detail Thrawn revealed. The recitation ended, and Thrawn stood waiting for comment. Bakeef gave Lamiov a furtive look out of the corner of his eye, but the other seemed to have attention only for Thrawn. Bakeef waited, allowing the Patriarch to break the silence first. Finally, Lamiov stirred.
So,
he said, his voice as hollow as Bakeef's heart was feeling.
Sunrise.
Sunrise,
Thrawn confirmed.
I assume you know what this could do to the people there.
I do.
And you're still willing?
A shadow of pain crossed Thrawn's face, but his nod was firm.
I believe it to be the Ascendancy's best chance, Your Venerante. Sunrise is the only place Jixis cares enough about to gather his forces to. If we don't do this, if I don't do this, he'll continue to pit family against family until we've battered ourselves so far down that we won't survive his assault.
But all that prodding will take time,
Bakeef pointed out. Surely he won't attack until he's sure he can win.
That gives us time. Does it?
Lamiov countered.
We've had skirmishes at Saus, Zarvici, Shion, and now Jamiron. It seems to me the Ascendancy is doing its very best to tear itself apart. Willingly, even eagerly.
You approve of this plan?
Bakeef countered.
Have you considered the implications? All the implications?
If you mean am I aware of what the cost might be for giving my consent, then the answer is yes,
Lamiov said.
And I accept it.
He waved Bakeef toward the door.
If you prefer to choose otherwise, you're welcome to wait in my office.
Bakeef looked at Thrawn. So many years on this path. Perhaps Lamiov had been right earlier about that path coming to an end. But if so, it wasn't going to end with Supreme General Bakeef cowering from consequences in an underground room.
Thank you, Your Venerante,
he said.
But no. I've trusted Senior Captain Thrawn in the past, and I've seen him achieve remarkable results. I think I can trust him one more time.
Thank you,
Thrawn said quietly.
Both of you.
Save your thanks until we've seen the final end,
Lamiov warned.
As you said, time is short. Let's get to work.
An hour later, they were finished.
You know how to use it?
Bakeef asked as Thrawn made one final check of the straps securing the crate inside the shuttle's cargo bay.
I do, Thrawn said.
Once again, Supreme General, I thank you.
Your thanks can wait.
Lamiov cut in, gazing at his calm, a tense expression on his face.
You'll need to get back to your ship right away. Admiral Dyloth and the Venturists have just arrived, and the Admiral's calling on your Pockian friends to surrender or to be destroyed.
3, 2, 1.
Arulani called, resisting the impulse to rub her eyes. A commander, she reminded herself firmly, needed to look at all times like she was fully in command of herself, her crew, and her ship. But 4 hours of sleep really wasn't cutting it.
Home again, home again,
Wutro murmured the old children's sing-song.
Senior Commander Bicleon?
Combat range clear, ma'am, Bicleon reported. Mid-range? Admiral, we've got company,
Larsiom cut in from the comm station.
The Ventress is here, currently in low planetary orbit.
He half-turned toward Arulani.
Admiral Dyloth reports he has a Nicardune blockade frigate pinned inside the gravity well.
What?
Wutro demanded.
Octremo, in-system jump,
Arulani ordered.
Get us in as close as you can, as fast as you can. Larsiom, acknowledge and request that Admiral Dyloth hold off on any action until we arrive.
Oh no,
Wutro breathed as the two officers began working their boards, her eyes wide with sudden understanding.
You don't think... Thrawn?
You know anyone else who's got a friend with his own Nicardune warship?
Arulani ground out. She'd skimmed Mid-Captain Simakro's report of the Rapak and Sunrise incidents, and had no doubt that the Council and Sindicure were ready to run Thrawn through the Shredder. So naturally, he'd come to Spacia. Of all the times and all the places for him to pop randomly back into view. Or was it random? Thrawn could easily have heard that she and the Vigilant had been assigned to protect Spacia. Had he come here expecting to find an ally and a sympathetic ear? Very likely. Unfortunately, he couldn't have predicted that Tamai and Droke would decide to pick a fight at Jamiron, and that Arulani would be sent to break it up. Now, instead of a sympathetic ear, he had Dyloth, Admiral of the Chiss Defense Force, who was reputed to have not a single sympathetic bone or ligament in his entire body.
Jump ready, Admiral, Octremo called.
Ventress says this is none of our business, ma'am,
Larsiom added.
Do they?
Arulani said coolly.
Octremo, 3, 2, 1.
A flicker of stars, and they were there. Arulani did a quick scan of the sky through the viewport.
There,
Wutro said, pointing.
There's the Ventress.
I see it, Arulani said. The ground lion man of war was at a mid-orbit altitude, but using its thrusters to maintain a geosynchronous position instead of circling the planet. 10 kilometers farther inward was the Nicardune blockade frigate, facing the Ventress and also using thrusters to hold position. And both ships were sitting directly over the UAG complex. Javosk had been right, Arulani thought distantly. Someone had gotten into the UAG vaults. The Supreme Admiral had simply been wrong about who that person would be.
Get me a tight beam to the Ventress,
she ordered Larsiom.
Bicleon, is that a shuttle loading into the blockade frigate?
Yes, ma'am, it is,
Bicleon confirmed. Not a familiar configuration. Must be one of theirs.
A Pakian one, yes,
Arulani said.
Larsiom?
Ventress says Admiral Dyloth is busy, ma'am,
Larsiom reported.
Tell him that Nicardune ship is commanded by a Chiss officer,
Arulani said.
Oskim, prepare a laser salvo aimed through the open space between the Ventress and the blockade frigate.
And make sure the back trail is clear for troll ships and civilians,
Wutro added, leaving Arulani's side and crossing to stand behind the weapon station.
Larsiom?
Arulani asked.
They say they already know that, ma'am,
Larsiom said.
They say Admiral Dyloth contacted Chila and was told the Sindicure has ordered that Senior Captain Thrawn be detained.
Arulani scowled. This just got better and better.
I need to talk to him. I'm sorry, ma'am, but he's refusing your call.
Sounds like he needs a tap on the shoulder,
Woodrow said darkly.
Apparently so, Orellani agreed. Ask him.
Ready, Admiral.
Fire. The Vigilance Spectrum laser spat out, cutting through the gap between the other two ships.
I'm guessing a full count,
Woodrow said.
One, two...
Orellani, what the hell are you doing?
A voice bellowed from the speaker.
Just getting your attention, Admiral Dyloth,
Orellani said.
I'm told you have an order to detain Senior Captain Thrawn.
Yes, I do,
Dyloth growled.
Would you care to see it?
All I need to know is if it's from Supreme Admiral Jafosk, Supreme General Barkeev, or someone on the Council.
You need a comm officer with cleaner ears. Mine already told him the order came from the Sindicure.
And since when does the Sindicure have direct authority over the Defense Force?
It doesn't matter who gave the order,
Dyloth countered.
The Sindicure wants Thrawn, I have him, and I'm going to deliver him. You can assist or stand down. Your choice.
Did you ask Senior Captain Thrawn why he's here?
Orellani asked.
I don't care why he's here.
Maybe you should,
Orellani said, some impatience creeping into her voice.
You need to look past your orders to the bigger picture.
My eyesight is just fine, thank you.
Maybe, maybe not, Orellani said. I know Thrawn, and he has a good reason for everything he does. Whatever his reason for being on Spassia, it's important.
Maybe to your expansionary defense fleet it is,
Dyloth said disdainfully.
All you do is look out at the chaos. The Defense Force sees things rather more on that larger scale you just mentioned.
How about the survival of the Ascendancy?
Orellani countered.
Is that a large enough scale for you?
Dyloth chuckled, a dry, humorless sound.
You always did tend toward the overly dramatic. Well, it's been nice chatting with you, but I have work to do. The warship's captain requested that I hold off any action until Thrawn's shuttle was aboard. And now it is. If you'll excuse me, I have a tractor beam operation to direct.
Orellani stared out the viewport, trying to sort through the possibilities. Was the request to allow the shuttle back aboard the frigate before being taken into custody nothing more than stalling? Or did Thrawn already have a plan for getting out from under the Venturous's thumb? In other words, should Orellani sit back and watch, or should she intervene? More risk, more consequences. But down deep, she knew she couldn't leave this to chance, or even to Thrawn's tactical skill. Whatever he was doing, it was important, and it was part of her job as an expansionary defense fleet officer to do what she could to help him succeed.
I'm sorry, Admiral, she said, but I can't let you do that.
Excuse me,
Dyloth said, his voice gone dark.
You can't let me carry out my orders?
Your illegal orders,
Orellani countered, looking at the tactical. The Vigilant was in combat range now, which meant she could fully engage the Venturous if she chose. If she picked her target carefully enough...
And who are you to decide which orders I should obey and which I should ignore?
Dyloth retorted.
I swear, Orellani, one more word out of you!
And in that instant, Thrawn made his move. The blockade frigate leapt forward, charging straight at the Venturous. Orellani caught her breath
waiting for the Man of War's lasers to open fire and blast the Nicardoon warship into bits of broken metal and ceramic. But before Dyloth's weapons crews could react, the frigate did a pitch and roll, turning away from the Ventress and blazing off at an angle across the edge of Spassia's atmosphere. "Electrical discharge from the Ventress," Bicleon snapped. "Looks like a massive short circuit around the bow laser and tractor emplacements. Run it back," Aralani ordered, turning to the secondary sensor display. With her full attention focused on Thrawn's maneuver, she hadn't even noticed whatever it was Bicleon was talking about. The sensor image of the Ventress flowed backward as Bicleon reversed the recording. There was the flash. Was that something that had been launched from the blockade frigate?
"That's not a short," Wutro said suddenly. "That was a crippler net."
She looked at Aralani, her expression seemingly caught amid surprise, outrage, and admiration.
"Thrawn threw a crippler net at him."
"And there he goes," Octremo said.
Aralani looked back at the viewport. Thrawn's blockade frigate was tearing at full speed across the starscape, weaving slightly as it bounced across Spassia's upper atmosphere, heading for the planetary rim and the edge of the gravity well beyond. The Ventress was also underway, running up its drive and charging off in pursuit. But the Man of War was far bigger than the blockade frigate, with correspondingly more mass and inertia. And it was quickly clear that with Thrawn's head start, there was no way the Ventress would catch him before he escaped to hyperspace. Dyloth's only other option was to open fire and try to bring him down. Aralani looked at the sensor display. Only he couldn't, she saw. His bow weapons cluster had been paralyzed by the crippler net's massive electrical jolt, and he hadn't bothered to activate the Ventress's shoulder weapons during the two ships' brief confrontation. By the time those lasers could be brought to sufficient power, Thrawn would be out of range. Wutro crossed back to Aralani's command chair.
"Another 30 seconds and it'll be clear," she said quietly. "But until then, a breach at a sphere can still reach him."
"He won't fire," Aralani said. "He just saw how fast and maneuverable that blockade frigate is. He'll realize that Thrawn will be able to dodge either weapon."
"He might do it out of spite,"
Utro warned.
"No."
Aralani cocked an eyebrow up at her.
"You didn't really think he wanted to follow the Syndicure's orders, did you?"
Utro frowned.
"Excuse me?" "All that legal order, blather, was purely for the official record," Aralani explained. "Now, if Jafarsk had given him the order, Thrawn would be in the Ventress's brig right now. But Dyloth has spent way too many years in the Defense Force to be impressed by any group of Aras Takra."
"Interesting,"
Utro murmured.
"He certainly had me fooled."
"As I said, that was the idea," Aralani said. "But there were signs."
"Such as?"
"Such as leaving his shoulder lasers powered down, so Thrawn only had to disable the bow cluster,"
Aralani said.
"Such as chatting with me, instead of simply tractoring in the frigate as soon as the shuttle was secured."
She gave Wutro a small smile.
"Such as trying to goad me into taking a shot at him, so that he could pretend I'd distracted him long enough for Thrawn to slip out of his pin."
"Thereby shifting some of the blame onto you?"
Utro gave a gentle snort.
"Nice of him."
"I would have been willing to share it with him," Aralani said. "And just for your private amusement, I was getting ready to fire on him anyway."
"Admiral, the Ventress is pulling back from its pursuit,"
Octremo reported.
"Looks like they've given up."
"Acknowledged," Aralani said. "Larsium, signal to Admiral Dyloth."
"Yes, ma'am,"
Larsium said.
"You have calm, Admiral."
"Aralani here, Admiral,"
Aralani called.
My sensor officer tells me he's observed some problems with your bow weapons cluster. Do you need any assistance?
Thank you, no,
Dyloth said. His tone was frosty, but Aurelani thought he could hear some private relief beneath it.
Your boy Thrawn is certainly a clever one. I hope you're happy.
I'll be happy when the Ascendancy is back to normal, Aurelani said. Until then, we of the military have to trust each other and watch each other's backs. There's a lot of darkness out there that we're being called on to stand against.
As I said before, overly dramatic,
Dyloth growled.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a cargo of debris to deliver to the UAG.
Aurelani frowned.
Debris?
Yes,
Dyloth said.
Don't worry, it wasn't one of yours. Seems some missile tucked away inside a fake asteroid blew itself up in the Ornfra system.
Aurelani looked up, exchanging startled looks with Wutro.
Was anyone hurt?
As I already told you, it wasn't our debris. I'll send you the records of the incident. Dyloth out.
Ventress has ended, Calm,
Larcium said.
Hell,
Wutro muttered.
They're bringing the damn things into the Ascendancy now?
Sounds like it, Aurelani said grimly. At least the Defense Force should know now what to look for. They'd have already known that if they bothered to read our reports,
Wutro grumbled.
I'm sure some of them read them. Admiral, we have a tight beam from the surface,
Larcium said, sounding puzzled.
It's Supreme General Barkeef.
Barkeef?
Wutro repeated, frowning.
What's he doing?
Oh, right. Thrawn.
Probably,
Aurelani said.
Send it over here, Junior Commander.
Yes, ma'am.
Aurelani keyed her chair's speaker, making sure it was the private volume setting.
Aurelani?
Barkeef, Admiral.
Barkeef's voice came back.
That was quite a show you put on up there.
We were mostly spectators, Aurelani said.
So I saw,
Barkeef said.
Still, it's fortunate that you arrived when you did. Senior Captain Thrawn recorded a message for you before he left Sparsia. Are you secure?
Yes, sir,
Aurelani said. Beside her, Wutro made a questioning rumble in her throat. Aurelani shook her head and gestured for her to stay by the chair.
Ready to receive.
Here it comes.
Aurelani listened in silence as the message played out.
Measured by sheer boldness, she commented when it was finished. I think Thrawn has finally outdone himself. I take it this isn't an official order.
You know it's not,
Barkeef said heavily.
Nor can it ever be. No, for the myriad political reasons I'm sure you've already thought of, this has to be completely on Thrawn's shoulders.
Understood,
Aurelani said. So even if it worked, Thrawn was going to face some serious consequences from the Sindicure. If it failed... Her stomach knotted. If it failed, nothing mattered anyway. The Ascendancy would be doomed.
If we're going to do this, we'll need to leave within the next few hours,
she told Barkeef.
Can you get us taken off Sparsia protection duty?
Admiral!
Larcium called from the comm station.
Admiral, a message marked urgent has just come through.
I'll look at it in a minute, Junior Commander,
Aurelani called back.
No, I think you'd better look at it now,
Barkeef said, sounding distracted.
I just got one, too. You're being recalled to Naperar.
We're what?
Arlani said, pulling up the message. From Supreme Admiral Jafosk, Chila, to all expansionary defense fleet ships. Effective immediately, all ships are relieved of planetary guard duty and ordered to return to Naperar.
Okay, that's different,
Utro muttered, leaning over Aralani's shoulder to read the message.
If by different you mean utterly nonsensical, I'd have to agree,
Aralani said, frowning at the message.
General, does this make any sense to you?
My version has a bit more detail,
Bakif growled.
Apparently the Sindicure is furious with you over your stunt at Jamiron a few hours ago. Toss that on top of the skirmish between the Greyshrike and Orison at Ornfra, and some of the families have had enough. Irizi Syndic Sistalmu led the charge, pushing through an order for the expansionary defense fleet to withdraw all its ships from worlds where any of the Nine have interests.
Which is all of them,
Utro put in.
Basically, yes,
Bakif said.
Jafosk is appealing for calm and common sense, but while he tries to work something out, he's pulling everyone back to Naperar.
He'll need to make an exception for the Vigilant,
Arlani reminded him.
Thrawn wants me at Shisa.
Yes, but the location may not be critical,
Bakif said.
Thrawn didn't know about this order when he recorded his message, after all. Why would it matter where you and the other ships rendezvous?
I don't know, Aralani said. But I've worked with Thrawn enough to know that details are usually important.
Point,
Bakif conceded.
Let me call Jafosk and get you an exemption.
Or maybe you can suggest he leave it a little vague as to where we're supposed to gather,
Arlani suggested.
As long as Naperar is at the top of the list, most ships will go there.
But you and whatever other captains you're able to persuade won't be officially violating the order,
Bakif said.
And if he words it properly, Syndic Sistalmu probably won't even notice there's a loophole. Good enough. I'll get on that right away.
Thank you, sir,
Arlani said.
We'll head out immediately.
Good luck,
Bakif said.
Any idea who else you're going to ask into this madness?
I have some ideas, Arlani said. I'll start with Thrawn's friends.
Bakif grunted.
I'm guessing that's a short list.
Arlani nodded heavily.
Yes, it is.
You realize that there's nothing at all official about this?
Arlani's voice came from Zyenda's chair speaker. An urgent voice, a worried voice, a determined voice.
If we do this, we do it without orders or sanction,
the Admiral continued.
We do it because we see a terrible threat looming over the Ascendancy, and we believe this to be our best and possibly only hope of defeating it.
I understand, Zyenda said, looking up at Apros. Her first officer's stance was unnaturally stiff as he stood beside her chair, his face troubled.
Meet Captain Apros. You have a comment?
Yes, Senior Captain, Apros said. First of all is the plan itself. Even if this device works the way Senior Captain Thrawn says it will, and I'm personally a bit uncomfortable with staking our hopes on a piece of alien tech, there's still a horrible potential for death. Actually, if it works, it'll probably mean more death.
That's the idea, Mid-Captain,
Arlani said.
If we can isolate the Grisk fleet...
Excuse me, Admiral,
Zyenda said. There was a look in Apros's eye that she knew all too well.
I'd like a brief consultation with my first officer.
Of course,
Arlani said.
Take as long as you need.
Thank you.
Zyenda touched her chair's mute key.
blockade, Mid-Captain. From your expression, I'm guessing it's your family?
It's all right, ma'am, he assured her. I'm all right. You need to finish your consultation with Admiral Arulani.
I need to make sure my first officer is fully aboard before I commit to anything this crazy, Zyenda said.
I'm aboard, Senior Captain, Apros assured her. This doesn't have anything to do with the mission. I'll be happy to talk about it later, but not right now.
All right,
Zyenda said, giving him one more hard look before keying her mic again.
Admiral Arulani?
I'm here, Senior Captain.
We're good to go, ma'am, Zyenda said. What do you want us to do?
Thrawn wants us to rendezvous at Shisa in 3 days,
Arulani said.
Pass the word if you can, but only to those you can trust. If the Syndicate gets even a whisper of this, it'll be over before it even starts.
Understood, Zyenda said. Is the invitation limited to Expansionary Defense Fleet ships?
Not necessarily,
Arulani said.
You have someone else in mind?
Maybe, Zyenda said. I'll let you know.
Do that. Arulani out.
Come ended, Senior Captain,
Shrent confirmed from across the bridge.
Acknowledged,
Zyenda said. She raised her eyebrows at Apros.
All right, Mid-Captain. Talk to me.
Yes, ma'am. Apros winced. But it's going to sound stupid.
I've done more than my fair share of stupid, Zyenda said. Unless you're thinking about starting a war with two other families over a non-existent Nyx mine, I'm already way ahead of you on that one. So spit it out.
Yes, ma'am. Apros hesitated. The thing is, the Jap don't get much respect in the Syndicure. We're mostly ignored or used as bargaining levers, and we're the butt of a lot of jokes. You'll remember Captain Roscoe's comment at Jamiron about the Jap not being a step up?
You're still one of the ruling families,
Zyenda reminded him. Yes, and we're justly proud of that, Apros said.
It's just,
if this works, it'll be you, Thrawn, and Arulani who will be remembered.
And probably brought up on charges.
But you'll be remembered, Apros repeated. I'm willing to die for the Ascendancy, Senior Captain. And I hope that if that happens, it'll be because I've made a difference. But I know it's petty, but I don't want that sacrifice to be forgotten.
I understand,
Zyenda said.
First of all, the important part of your statement is that, yes, you'll be making a difference. That's the whole point of this.
Yes, ma'am. I know.
As for being remembered,
Zyenda shook her head.
History isn't ours to write, Apros. None of us know how we'll be remembered by scholars 100 years from now. But be assured that those who know you, who have worked with you, and who respect you, will hold your memory close. Everyone else...
She gave him a small shrug.
Does it really matter?
Apros pursed his lips. No. No, I suppose not.
And look at the bright side, Zyenda continued. If things work out right, you might just end up being the hero your family has been waiting for all these years. The one who will finally put an end to all the chap jokes.
With all due respect, Senior Captain, I think that might be pushing it, Apros said, giving her a tentative smile. All right, ma'am. Self-pity moment over.
Good,
Zyenda said.
Have Wiki plot a course for Shisa. We'll head out after I've made a couple of calls.
To others who might be willing to risk their lives on this ridiculous plan?
To others who are ready to make a difference,
Zyenda corrected.
And to be remembered by their friends.
She motioned toward the helm.
Get to work on that course, Mid-Captain. We've got a long path ahead of us.
Memories. 12.
He would give it all he could,
Thras remembered, promising himself, as he and Thrawn left the Stybla honoring ceremony.
He would do it for the honor of the myth and the glory of the Ascendancy, or he would die trying.
Even now, careening inexorably toward his death, he could nevertheless appreciate the irony. A massive alien spaceship, snatched out from under the noses of a chaff task force, determined to gain sole possession of it. He and a single human female from lesser space, attempting to take the ship to an uninhabited refuge world from which they could offer the treasure trove of Republic technology to the full Hierarchy Defense Council. Only it hadn't worked out that way. The ship was too damaged to reach the world they'd hoped to bring it to. Worse, there was a whole group of survivors aboard that no one had known about when Thras first agreed to this mission. And the reality of their chosen crash site dictated that either he and his human pilot companion could survive, or the other innocent humans could. But not both.
"You can't handle the landing alone," the pilot said, her voice grim but resolute. "But I could do that while you go."
She was right, of course. Thras could escape. There was a ship aboard that he should be able to fly back to the Ascendancy. He could yet survive to do all the great things Patriarch Thuraki expected of him and Thrawn. But no.
"And who would keep the remaining systems from self-destruction while you cleared a path through the pylon for me?"
he countered. She had no answer for that, because there wasn't one. If Thras left, everyone aboard would die. He thought about his father, and how he'd given his life for a man he didn't even know. How could Thras turn his back on these people, save himself, and condemn all of them to certain death? The answer was simple. He couldn't. There would be no honor in this for the myth, nor would there be glory for the Ascendancy. It was likely no one would ever even know what happened here today. They almost certainly would never find whatever remained of the ship. Perhaps that was for the best. He'd seen the ruling families battling together, striving to turn small advantages into political gains. A ship bristling with alien technology could spark a frenzy that might have huge and lasting effects on the always precarious balance of power. If Thras couldn't bring glory, at least he could perhaps succeed in not bringing destruction.
"Your people will come here someday,"
the woman said quietly.
"Until then, the survivors have enough food and supplies to last for generations. They'll survive. I know they will."
Thras looked at the displays, at the image of the stone-filled valley rushing up toward them. He hoped she was right. But like the ship itself, it was probably something no one would ever know. The survivors might eventually figure out what had happened. But even if they did, they wouldn't remember Thras. Perhaps they would remember the woman who had worked to save them, but not the Chiss who died at her side. But that wasn't important. He would know, and the woman would know. "Are you prepared to embrace this secret to your graves and beyond?" The old myth oath whispered through his mind. Was that promise heavy with responsibility, but empty of reality? Or did its words truly hint at something beyond death? He didn't know, but he was about to find out.
"I hope someday humans and Chiss will be able to work side by side in peace,"
he told the woman.
"As do I, Syndic Mithrasophis, of the 8th ruling family,"
she said, taking his hand.
Then let us bring this part of history to a close, he said, trying to put some confidence into his voice. May warriors' fortune smile on our efforts.
And if not on theirs, he added silently, perhaps warriors' fortune would smile on Thrawn. The man who was, and who had truly always been, his brother. Chapter 21. The stars reappeared, and the Orison was finally back home. And the time had come, Roscoe thought with a certain dread, for that conversation with Patriarch Rivlex. But not quite yet. The Orison had made the last half of the voyage in a single leg, and even in the relatively smooth space between Chiss worlds, prudence dictated that a pilot build a hefty margin of error into the course calculations. As a result, the Orison had emerged from hyperspace a long way from the planet itself. Far enough, in fact, that Rigar's sun was barely distinguishable from the background stars.
Helm, get me an in-system jump, Roscoe ordered.
To the planet? Ramis asked.
Where else?
Roscoe asked, frowning.
I thought you might want to take a look at the junkyard first, Ramis said. See if that alien fleet is still there.
And see if we can get one of them to chase us again?
Roscoe countered.
No, I think we'll give that a pass. At least until after we've talked to the Patriarch.
Yes, ma'am. Ramis nodded to the pilot. In-system jump to Regal.
Acknowledged.
And as the pilot started the necessary calculations, Roscoe thought about her last contact with the outside universe. That strange conversation with Senior Captain Zyenda. Her proposal had been sheer insanity, of course. Heading off to an alien world to try to trap and destroy an enemy fleet wasn't something a responsible captain did. Certainly not on a whim, and absolutely not without orders. Roscoe's primary responsibility was to the Klar family. Her second was to her ship and crew, and neither obligation permitted that kind of adventurism. She and Ramis had discussed it briefly after Zyenda's call, and both had been in agreement. Which didn't mean they were ignoring the situation's potential for disaster. The Orison had already tangled briefly with one of these alien warships, and if Jixtus was indeed the imminent threat Zyenda claimed he was, then he and his forces definitely needed to be dealt with. But not in some haphazard way, and not in the midst of family distrust and heightened antagonism. And definitely not if it meant blindly following Senior Captain Thrawn. She wasn't ready to take a step like that.
Ready, Captain? Ramis said.
Take us in.
There was the usual flicker, and they had arrived.
Contact system patrol and get us a low equatorial orbit, she told the pilot. Commander Ramis, have a shuttle prepared. Calm. Get me Lieutenant Rupiov at the Homestead Defense Center.
Captain, we have a signal already coming through, the comm officer said. Patriarch Rivlex is calling you.
Send it here,
Roscoe said, keying her chair's speaker. The things she had to say to the Patriarch weren't for the rest of the bridge crew to hear.
Yes, ma'am,
the officer keyed for reception.
Captain Roscoe. This is Patriarch Rivlex.
The Patriarch's voice boomed, the words stiff with anger. Boomed across from the bridge speaker. Roscoe looked sharply at the comm officer, got a helpless look in return, and a gesture at the comm board. Apparently, Rivlex's ground-based comm center had overridden her choice of speakers, forcing the conversation to go public. And that, Roscoe realized with a sinking heart, was not good.
Captain Roscoe here, your venerante, she said.
Finally,
Rivlex bit out.
I've been trying to reach you for the past day. Jesus said you've been attacked, and that he hadn't been able to contact you.
We've been in hyperspace, your venerante, Roscu said. We wanted to get back to Regal.
You wanted to get back?
Rivlex interrupted harshly.
Did I, or did I not send you to Ornfra to find evidence of Dasklo duplicity?
Yes, your venerante, you did, Roscu said. But as Jixtus said, we were attacked and decided...
You don't look damaged, Captain,
Rivlex said, again cutting her off.
You made it all the way here without putting it in a blue dock for repairs. I'll ask again, were your orders to go to Ornfra?
Roscu ground her teeth. It was a pattern she'd seen before. The Patriarch picking someone who displeased him and grinding that person into the dirt in front of friends, colleagues, and other officials. A double helping of shame and humiliation, usually topped off with a withdrawal of position, status, or sometimes even family affiliation.
My orders were to go to Ornfra, she said.
And did you achieve the goal that was set before you?
No, your venerante. I did not.
That was all I needed to know, Commander Ramis.
Yes, your venerante, Ramis called.
You're hereby promoted to captain and reinstated as commander of the Orison. You will prepare a shuttle and send former Captain Roscu to the homestead. Then you will go to Ornfra and get me the proof I need to take down the Dasklo.
Understood, your venerante, Ramis said briskly. Do I report back to you on my findings? Or do I communicate directly with Jixtus and your new fleet?
Yes, my new fleet.
Rivlex echoed, his voice going even darker.
I'd almost forgotten that Roscu deliberately intruded on a secret military assemblage that she had no business pressing her nose into. Did she tell anyone else about it?
No, your venerante, she didn't, Ramis assured him. I assumed it was to be kept within the family, and had therefore kept close watch on her communications.
Excellent, Captain,
Rivlex said, some of the anger easing from his voice.
Excellent indeed. See that Roscu is put into wrist restraints before she's returned to me. There may be charges of treason added to the list.
Yes, your venerante, Ramis said. We'll communicate our findings directly to you. May I ask if we may take a day or two of leave before traveling to Ornfra? My crew's been in space for a long time.
Are you hard of hearing, Captain?
Rivlex growled, the anger back in full force.
No, you may not take leave. I want that evidence now. Do you hear me? Right now!
Of course, your venerante, Ramis said. He looked at Roscu, a small smile touching the corners of his lips. Roscu felt a bitter taste rise in her mouth. So here it was, the final hammer on the end of her career. Only now did she remember how casually Ramis had accepted his demotion when Roscu first talked the Patriarch into letting her take command of the Orison. Looking back, she could see now that he'd simply hidden his resentment until he could stab her in the back. And, by her own actions, Roscu had set herself up for destruction.
Then prepare your ship, Captain. As for you, Roscu, I'll see you very soon.
The comm chimed, and he was gone.
Orders, Captain?
The pilot asked in an uncertain voice. Prepare the Orison for hyperspace, Ramis said.
Yes, sir. And the shuttle?
Ramis looked at Roscu. What shuttle? Roscu frowned, noting peripherally that none of the rest of the bridge crew was reacting in the slightest to his strange comment.
Yes, sir,
the pilot said,
all brisk and businesslike again.
Course? Wait a minute, Commander! Captain,
Roscoe corrected herself.
The Patriarch ordered you to send me to the homestead.
I was also ordered to head out as soon as possible, Ramis reminded her.
But...
I believe Senior Captain Zayinda specified Shisa as the rendezvous point, he continued. Set our course there.
Captain, what are you doing?
Roscoe asked in a low voice. Ramis was about to make the worst mistake of his career, and she couldn't just sit by and watch him do it.
You can't simply ignore the Patriarch that way.
You mean the Patriarch who ordered an alien ship to track us down and shoot us out of the sky? Ramis countered, his voice suddenly cold. The Patriarch who's made a deal with the owner of that alien ship? The Patriarch who relieved you of command because you were more worried about the Ascendancy than his vendetta against the Dasklo?
None of that makes a difference,
Roscoe said. I believe it makes all the difference, Ramis said. I told you before that I thought we were standing on an edge. I'm even more convinced of that now.
But you also said you didn't like Aralani's plan,
Roscoe pointed out. Because you didn't like it, Ramis said. And that was mostly because Senior Captain Thrawn was going to be in charge, and it was clear you didn't want to submit your ship to his authority. He smiled tightly. But it's not your ship anymore, is it? Roscoe felt her throat tighten.
It wasn't that easy, she knew.
Given her history with Thrawn, turning over her command was only part of it. But Ramis was right. The Ascendancy was in trouble, and it was the suspicions and passions of people like Patriarch Rivlex that were driving that rush to destruction. Someone had to step out of the tangle, rise above the family politics, and do something. She and Ramis were Klar, but they were Chiss first.
Your ship, Captain Ramis,
she said, standing up and stepping to the side of the command chair.
Your orders.
Thank you, Ramis said, stepping over to the chair and sitting